The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter Number 16, Text Number 11, given by His Grace, Sriman Sankarshan Dasadhikari, recorded on December 27th, 2015, in Melbourne, Australia.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Brahmanan mai diya chipata archayanta ntusyat hrida smita sudha ukshita padma vaktra vanya anuraga kalaya atmaja vat grinanta sambodhayanti aham eva aham upahrita tai. Ye brahmanam mai diya chipator yachantas.
Ye brahmanam mai diya chipator yachantas.
Tus yaddedasmiti dadokshita padma vaktra.
Tus yaddedasmiti dadokshita padma vaktra.
Vanyanuraga kalayat majavad grinanta.
Vanyanuraga kalayat majavad
sambodayat yahami vaham upahritasthai. And there's a Y at the end of the word. For not merge that into the next word. Instead of going sambodayanti, go sambodayat yaham. That's how it flows properly. Sambodayant yaham. Not sambodayanti aham, but sambodayant yaham. Like that. Ye brahmanam mai diya chipator yachantas.
Ye brahmanam mai diya chipator yachantas.
Tas yad dedas miti sadokshita padma vaktra.
Tas yad dedas miti sadokshita padma vaktra.
Vanya nuraga kalayat majavad grinanta.
Vanya nuraga kalayat
sambodayat yahami vaham upahritasthai.
Which persons?
Brahmanan, the Brahmanas, mai, in me, diya, with intelligence, chipata, uttering harsh words, archayanta, respecting, tusyat, gladdened, hrida, hearts, smita, smiling, sudha, nectar, ukshita, wet, padma, lotus-like, vaktra, faces, vanya, with words, anuraga kalaya, loving, atmajavat, like a son, grinanta, praising, sambodhayanti, pacify, aham, I, eva, as, aham, I, upahrita, being controlled, tai, by them. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. On the other hand, they captivate my heart, who are gladdened in heart and who, their lotus faces enlightened by nectarian smiles, respect the Brahmins even though the Brahmins utter harsh words. They look upon the Brahmanas as my own self and pacify them by praising them in loving words, even as a son would appease an angry father, or as I am appeasing and pacifying you. Purport. It has been observed in many instances in the Vedic scriptures that when the Brahmins or Vaishnavas curse someone in an angry mood, the person who is cursed does not take it upon himself to treat the Vaishnavas or Brahmins in the same way. There are many examples of this. For instance, the sons of Kuvera, when cursed by the great sage Narada, did not seek revenge in the same harsh way, but submitted. Here also, when Jai and Vijay were cursed by the four Kumaras, they did not become harsh towards them, rather they submitted. That should be the way of treating Brahmins and Vaishnavas. One may sometimes be faced with a grievous situation created by a Brahmin, but instead of meeting him with a similar mood, one should try to pacify him with a smiling face and mild treatment. Brahmins and Vaishnavas should be accepted as early representatives of Narayan. Nowadays, some foolish persons have manufactured the term Daridra Narayan, indicating that the poor man should be accepted as a representative of Narayan. But in Vedic literature, we do not find that poor men should be treated as representatives of Narayan. Of course, those who are unprotected are mentioned here, but the definition of this phrase is clear from the Shastras. The poor man should not be unprotected, but the Brahmin should be especially treated as the representative of Narayan and should be worshipped like him. It is specifically said that to pacify the Brahmins, one's face should be lotus-like. A lotus-like face is exhibited when one is adorned with love and affection. In this respect, the example of the father's being angry at the son and the son's trying to pacify the father with smiling and sweet words is very appropriate.
Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jatapada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavam Cha Shri Rupam Sagra Jatam Sahagana Ragana Tanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitam Cha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vrestaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tinamine Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nivishesha Shunyavari Paschachyade Shatarine.
This reminds me of one pastime of Prabhupada with his servant Shrutakirti Prabhu. In the massage, there's two oils used. One is the mustard oil on the body as a whole, and the sandalwood oil used on the head. Now, sandalwood oil is very expensive compared to mustard oil. So, Shrutakirti spilled the bottle of sandalwood oil on the floor. And I think this was the best time. So, Prabhupada said, "You will not have any intelligence for 80 years. And Shrutakirti said, smiling, he said, "Prabhupada, I thought it would take much longer than that." And Prabhupada laughed. So Prabhupada was angrily chastising him, but instead of trying to, you know, take some defensive position, he took a humble position. "Well, Prabhupada, I thought it would take much longer than that." And so when you're chastised by the Brahmins and the Vaishnavas, it's stated here, instead of taking a defensive move, you take a humble move, you see. And that way you pacify them, cool down their anger. Actually, when a Vaishnava or angry gets angry at you, Vaishnava or Brahma gets angry at you, it's a great blessing. Because that purifies, they're representatives of Narayan, and that purifies of so many sinful activities committed in so many millions of lifetimes. So as Prabhupada, I repeated the other day, Prabhupada said, the student who is more chastised, he is advanced. So don't feel bad. Don't try to take a defensive mood at the Brahmana or Vaishnava, especially the spiritual master or the spiritual master's representatives correct you or chastise you. Take it as a great blessing. And in a humble, a smiling face, lotus-like face, it said in. A very smiling face, mild behavior. And this way one can make very nice advancement on the pathway back to home, back to Godhead. Because we're supposed to be lower than the straw in the street, isn't it? If you don't feel yourself lower than the straw in the street, then my dear devotees, I beg to inform you, you won't be able to relish the holy name. So if you really want to enter that nectar of the holy name, humility is the key. So when you're being chastised by a Vaishnava or a Brahmin, that is a great opportunity to cultivate humility. A very good opportunity. So don't let those golden opportunities pass by that you try to retaliate. But take it as a great blessing, you see. This example is there. Jayan Vijay took it as a great blessing. Varkumaras took it as a great blessing. So this is how we should take the corrections, the chastisements of our superiors, take it as great blessings. So when this humility comes, Krishna becomes manifest. Actually, Krishna is already present, but we cannot perceive him due to the coverings of lust, anger, greed, madness, illusion, envy, and fear, which are all manifestations of false pride. You see, this false pride manifests in all the forms of all these coverings. So by developing that humility, then we can actually experience Krishna. The essence of everything is Krishna is the pure essence of everything. Because everything is his energy. So, and he's not that he's just an energy. Krishna is a person. And by his divine potencies, he's manifested everywhere. As confirmed in the Brahma Samhita, ekopya savrichabitam jagadanda kohutim yat shakstarasti jagadanda chayayadanda andantadasta paramanu chayantadastam govindam adipurusham damaham bhajami. He is an undifferentiated entity, as there is no distinction between potency and the possessor thereof. In his work of creation of millions of worlds, his potency remains inseparable. He is present in his fullness in every one of the atoms that are scattered throughout the universe at one and the same time. Such is the primeval Lord whom I adore. So we have to learn how to connect with that Lord, you see. And when the Vaishnavas and Brahmins get angry at us, it's a fantastic opportunity to, you know, overcome this egoistic, self-centered tendency that we've all been carrying around with us for millions and billions in births, keeping us caught up here in birth, death, old age, disease, which are very unpleasant and nasty situations for the soul to be in. Death is not natural. Being forced out of your, kicked out of your body is an unnatural position. Birth also, being squeezed through that little tube in the mother's body, it's a very traumatic experience. We're not meant to go through these things, you see. We're meant to be frolicking with Krishna and his transcendental pastimes in the spiritual sky eternally, that's all. That's our only business. Or one of his expanded forms in the Vaikuntha realm. That's our only business. We have no business with this other stuff. But yet somehow that we've got caught up in this foolish conception that I am the center. Everything revolves around me, you see. This is our problem, this egocentric, self-centered, I am the center consciousness. Causing us nothing but misery, birth after birth after birth after birth after birth. But when I come in contact with a bona fide spiritual master or a bona fide sadhu who gives me this knowledge, purely describes to me what is this knowledge, and I take this knowledge seriously, you see,
and my life becomes transformed. Brahmanda Brahmite Konya Bhagavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Bij. After wandering throughout the universe, up and down, around and around, through the 8,400,000 species, one living entity who is very, very fortunate comes in contact with a bona fide spiritual master. And by the combined mercy of the spiritual master and Krishna, he gets the seed of bhakti, bhakti lata bij, planted in his heart. So, now what you do with that seed, you see, once you come in contact with a bona fide sadhu, a bona fide preacher, and he implants that seed of bhakti in your heart through the medium of transcendental sound vibration, what are you going to do with it? What are you going to do with that seed? You see, a seed can be watered, and it will fructify, it will manifest, or you can not water the seed, and it will just die. So when you get that seed in your heart, then it's up to you what you're going to do with it. If you want to water that seed, it's not difficult. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. That is the watering process, you see. And if you can avoid the 10 offenses, and that watering process very quickly takes one to the perfectional stage. If you strictly avoid all the 10 offenses. The difficult as neophyte devotees is we don't strictly follow this. We don't strictly avoid the 10 offenses. That's the problem. We keep hovering on this semi-Krishna conscious platform, you see, where we don't really get satisfied. We're not really karmis, but we're not really satisfied either. It's kind of some midway position between devotional service and material life. So we need to get off the neophyte platform and come to the pure bhakti, shuddha bhakti platform. Because there we will taste unlimited nectar, unlimited satisfaction, not depending in any way on the external situation. Just due to the internal awakening. You can even be put in prison and be in bliss, you see, if you have that internal awakening. A devotee can be happy in any position simply by because Krishna is there. When you actually connect with Krishna, you fully connect with Him. And it's the highest and most inconceivable nectar at every minute. So we really have to, you know, get down to the real business, and that is to cleanse ourselves of all the dirt in the heart and awaken pure love of God. So if there's any questions, you can pass them forward now. How can I kill my false ego? You have to awaken your real ego, that's all. The Mayavadis want to kill their false ego, but it doesn't work. They want to deny the self. That doesn't work. The way to kill the false ego is you ignite your real ego, Jivara Sarupa Hoy, Krishnera Nityadas. I am the eternal servant of Krishna. When you ignite the real ego, you see, and you, not just theoretically, but you actually do it, you get initiated by a bona fide guru who represents Krishna, you give your life and soul to carrying out his instructions. In this way, you see, your false ego is automatically gone. I kill my false ego and pride. I always commit offenses towards devotees being puffed up. My pride and false pride. Yeah, you just have to ignite your real ego. And instead of, you know, finding fault with the devotees, learn how to worship the devotees. Every devotee is worshipable. Every devotee has divine qualities. Learn how to appreciate the wonderful divine qualities of every devotee. Should we please brahmanas who are by their guna, and also those born in a brahmin family? Someone born in a brahmin family is not necessarily a brahmin. They're called brahmabandhu, or the friends of the brahmins. Birth in a brahmin family does not make one a brahmin. You have to develop the qualifications. If my father is a high court judge, am I automatically a high court judge? No. I have to also qualify. It's a good opportunity, but I have to also qualify myself, you see. Just because I'm a Brahmin in a Brahmin family doesn't mean I'm a Brahmin. A Brahmin is not by birth. When Krishna describes the Varnashram system, he says, Chatur Varnam Maya Shishtam Gunda Karma Vibhagosha. According to qualities and activities, your position in the Varnas and Ashrams is understood, not according to your birth. We see many Brahmins in India in temples doing puja and ceremonies. How should we look upon them and how should our attitude be? Well, they go out back and smoke biddies after the arti. So you can understand what is their actual position. You mentioned that with humility one can dive deep into the holy names. How do you... define real humility? Real humility, the perfection of humility is when you find everyone to be worshipable and yourself to be abominable. That's the mood of humility in the perfectional stage. It's felt by the Uttama Bhakta. Does being humble mean we accept everything that comes to us? The Buddhist monks, they do that. They say, whatever comes to me, they go up with their begging bowl. If somebody puts a McDonald hamburger in it, they'll eat it because it came to my begging bowl. You see? That is not our philosophy. Accept whatever comes to me. Can we express our view, opinion, or give explanation to devotees for our action? Certainly. If someone corrects you, you knew you were doing the right thing, but someone corrected you, you could explain to them what you were doing. This is not some fanaticism, some blind fanaticism we're talking about here. It's a mood. Now, if somebody tells me, this is the wrong thing, but I knew it was right, then I can explain to them why it's right. If you know what you're doing is correct, then you can explain to them. We can be wrongly corrected also. So maybe they're the ones who should be corrected now, because they wrongly corrected you. It's a matter of being sincere. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of some examples, but sometimes we might be wrongly corrected. But our mood should not be one of anger. We can politely inform the person that actually this is, I was asked to do this. Just like here's an example last night. Some little conversation I had on the internet. Prabhupada said if we repeat the philosophy as it is, we can take over the world. So I was kind of enlivened by that concept. Prabhupada said we can take over the world if we keep the philosophy as it is. So on the internet, a place where different disciples talk, different Prabhupada followers talk, I mentioned, let's take over the world for Prabhupada. I thought that's, just an enlivening spirit. Let's take over the world for Prabhupada, So somebody said, we can't really do that because he's not physically present. It's only possible that he's physically present. But that's... So should I take that... Someone was trying to correct me. Well, Prabhu, you really can't say that because Prabhupada's not physically present. Now, should I be humble and say, well, okay, no, because that's not philosophically correct. He was the one who needed to be corrected. Because what I was saying was directly from Prabhupada. There's a letter right in the Veda base where he tells Jagadish, my god brother, he says, if you keep the philosophy as it is, you will take over the world. So, I knew that I was speaking according to what Prabhupada had said, and this devotee was wrong. So sometimes they're wrong. He tried to correct me, but I had to correct him for his incorrect correction of me. That happens too, you see. But you have to be sincere and honest and not puffed up. If you are rightly corrected, you should accept it. You should be sincere enough to know the difference. It's not that I'm attached to being right. You see what I'm saying? I'm attached to what's true. And if you can show me that what I did was wrong, I'll appreciate that. But if you're showing me what I did was wrong, was actually wrong, then truth is the principle, not whether I'm right or wrong. The truth is the principle. So then it's my duty, not a matter of egotism, of one-upmanship. It's my duty to point out to you actually what you said was wrong. So I had explained to this devotee that Prabhupada, just like Prabhupada said about Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, he said, it is not that he is dead and gone. This idea that Prabhupada is dead and gone is actually a material conception. This devotee was saying that we can't really spread the movement like we could before when Prabhupada was here. That's absolutely false. The proof is, how much has it spread since 1977? We only had 100 temples and about, 5,000 initiated devotees in 1977. Now it's at 10, there's at least 50,000 initiated devotees. It's grown 10 times at least when Prabhupada was not here. So this philosophy is completely ridiculous. We can't spread the movement with Prabhupada not physically present. Completely ridiculous. So, I had to point out to him. So the point is, you may be the one that should be correcting him. So, but you don't want it to be a one-upmanship thing. You have to sincerely be devoted to doing what's true and what is correct. And whether you have to take the correction and humbly accept it, or you have to give a correction, one should be equipoised and neutral, you see. Whether I take a correction from you or I give a correction to you, you see, it's the same thing. We simply have to come closer and closer to the truth. That's a way to understand it. My chanting is very mechanical. What hope do I have to go back to Krishna? His mercy is your only hope, Prabhu. We're all in that position. Our chanting isn't very good. We're like machines, japa machines. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. But it's not coming so much from our hearts. It's more or less just on the lips. It's called mechanical chanting. It's on the lips. We're not chanting so much from the heart. We're chanting mostly on the lips. So what's the hope for us mechanical chanters? Prabhupada's mercy, Krishna's mercy, Guru's mercy. That's our hope. But the thing is, you have to endeavor to get over. You're not going to get that mercy unless you're sincerely trying to give up this mechanical consciousness. You have to sincerely strive every day when you're chanting your rounds to give up this mechanical consciousness and chant from your heart, you see. Prabhupada said, actually, the first class chanting is to feel the presence of Krishna. That's the first class chanting of japa. If you can't do that, come to the second class platform, which is to carefully hear and chant each syllable. But the first class position is to feel Krishna's presence. That means you're chanting in an offering of love to Krishna, who's hearing every word coming out of your mouth. You see? So we have to come to this higher level of chanting. Yes.
Isn't it that when you understand your chanting is mechanical, so you endeavor towards more, if just be thinking, oh, I'm chanting my japa very nicely every day, then there is no chance of improving. But if somebody is feeling that I'm chanting mechanically, then they can put their efforts.
It's very good. This person is in a good state of consciousness. A very good state of consciousness. They're understanding, I have a problem. My chanting is mechanical. This person is going to make advancement when they chant their japa. Some things, yeah, my chanting is really good. I really chant great japa. They're not going anywhere, you see. For things, my chanting is very deficient. I have to do something to get out of this rut I'm in. Those devotees will make very nice advancement when they chant. Can you please give some tips on building up strong relationships between devotees? The loving exchanges are there. You've met my Rupa Goswami. You distribute prasadam to the devotees. You accept the prasad from the devotees. You give gifts to the devotees. You accept gifts from the devotees. That also includes giving service to the devotee, which is a gift of your time. You give service to the devotee, you accept service from the devotees, you reveal your mind to the devotees, honestly reveal your mind to them, and open your heart up when they reveal their mind to you.
It's on the other side also. One has to be sure where they are developing their relationship with the devotees even. Sometimes it becomes amongst the devotees, different relationships develop something different. Sometimes it drags us towards the materialism.
Yeah, if we find ourselves, you know, engaged in mundane katha with devotees, that means we're all drifting, collectively drifting off the mark. So that association has to be based on Krishna consciousness. When I joined the ashram in Austin in 1971, there was a rule on the wall, rule sheet, or a guide sheet, and one of the rules was no relative topics allowed in this ashram. You couldn't talk about relative things. Everything had to be Krishna conscious. Everything had to be any word you spoke had to be Krishna katha. That was a rule of the ashram.
And also that brahmacharis with the brahmacharis and matajis with the matajis, not intermingling and having a relationship.
That's right. That's right. Fire and butter. The Prabhupada said the women are good and the men are good. When they come together, it's bad. Because this tendency we have to enjoy the opposite sex, it's the most dangerous tendency. Therefore, we don't, if we're talking, it's just business. We don't joke around with the opposite sex. Even with one's own wife, Lord Chaitanya never joked with his whole married life. He never joked with his wife except one time. He cut one joke only with his wife. Prabhupada explains. Even with your own wife, it's very serious. Not joking, frivolous joking around kind of thing. So yeah, but Prabhupada, when I was a brahmachari, I got a letter from Prabhupada. This letter went on every temple bulletin board in the whole movement, I think, when I got the letter. Prabhupada gave the rules for men and women associating. He said, almost nil. Almost nil, he said. And in a meeting like this, we can openly talk, you see. We can openly discuss men and women, we can openly talk. But outside of this, any association with women or any talking with women, Papa said, almost nil. That's the move. Okay. How to help a devotee who was carrying away my lust and is going astray? Well, it needs to be, you got to counsel him. Explain to him, Prabhu, I think you're getting a little too frivolous for the women or something like this. You know, you got to become more serious. This is a dangerous tendency. How should we take when a junior devotee chastises us? Well, if he's saying something correct, take it. If he's right, take it. If he's wrong, correct him. To what extent should we be humble? Unlimitedly humble. How do I take shelter of the complete shelter of the holy name? I'm chanting but unable to take Krishna, to taste Krishna constantly. Wow, I'm impressed. That means this person is tasting Krishna some of the time. I'm envious. I don't taste him at all. So here's someone who's actually tasting him some of the time. I need to become their disciple. Here's someone who's tasting, they're tasting him some of the time, not able to taste Krishna constantly. I have to learn from them. I'm not able to taste Krishna constantly and consistently. Please explain how to taste Krishna's name always. Or whatever you're here, I would say this, since you're higher than me in your realization already, I can see. Whatever you're doing to taste Krishna some of the time, just increase it. And I hope someday I can taste them even at least a little bit of the time. How can I become so much desperate for Krishna? Something desperate for Krishna? Desperate?
Yes.
Huh? desperate for Krishna like yourself. Yeah, for me it's a matter of desperation. It's like life or death. It's like I feel myself, like Prabhupada said to Bhakti Siddhanta, save me, a fallen. That's I feel about myself. That I'm, you know, a devotional basket case. I'm just begging Krishna to save me. You mentioned avoiding offenses. Yet due to ignorance, circumstances, offenses inadvertently occur. Is due to this progress in devotional services checked how to go beyond? Yes, we have a tendency to be offensive due to ignorance. So you have to hear Bhagavatam, Gita, hear from senior devotees. In this way, learn how to overcome these lower tendencies. Help me with those questions that fell down there. I guess nobody heard me.
I got all of them.
Okay, good. I couldn't see. To be inattentive while chanting, is it an offense? If so, can we call it the 11th offense? You could, but it's actually the third offense, because the spiritual master orders us to be attentive. Therefore, you're committing the third offense when you, you're inattentive in your chanting. No, to not have complete faith in the holy name is the tenth offense, and then to be inattentive is an add-on. Yes. When we describe it, it's not called part of the tenth offense. It's also offensive being. Depends on how you look at it. It's a matter of technicality. The point is, don't be inattentive. To be inattentive, it is the tenth offense. It's the 11th offense. It's the third offense. Whatever it is, don't be inattentive. That's the point.
Can I say something?
Yes.
Because being inattentive is the number one offense. Because from that, all the offenses will happen.
Yes. So whatever it is, don't be inattentive. Whatever offense you want to call it, don't be inattentive. How to do Tulsi worship at home? Well, you have to... I'm not going to give you a whole lesson today on how to do it, you know, but see, but very simple. See what they're doing at the temple and do it at home. That's all. Do the same thing at home. The temple is a place to show you how you should do your home worship. What is the best way to learn the verses and shlokas? Whatever works for you. Everyone can have their own. There are different techniques, but it really depends on what's practical for you. My technique is called throwing the mud against the wall. You keep throwing it and throwing it until some of it sticks. I just keep repeating it again and again and again and again and again until it finally sticks. I'll take a verse, I'll be like, I want to memorize this verse. It's really a cool verse. I want to learn this verse, you see. Shvavidvara ushtrakarai sangstutak parishakpachu najjata karma pato peto jadda damagadagra chaha. So, you know, I'll read the first line. I'll read it. Shvavidvara ushtrakarai. I keep saying shvavidvara. I'll keep reading it off the thing, then look away from the page. That first line, shvavidvara ushtrakarai, shvavidvara ushtrakarai. Say it again and again until I can do it without looking. Then add the second line. Svavyadara ushtaka sangstitak parishak pashu. In this way, then get the second line, then say both of them, and I can do it without looking, and then go add the third line while reading it, add then the third line without looking. In this way, you keep drilling until it's finally you can stick, and you put the whole book away, you say the whole thing, and you do it as many. Do I do it again and again and again without looking? And then tomorrow you probably won't remember anything. So you got to go through the whole process again. But if you keep doing that, gradually get to the point where you got, you know, boom. And repetition helps. It's like I'm really fond of the Brahma Samhita prayers, the Govinda prayers. So I, with great difficulty, I learned them and the English. It took me a long time. I mean, just I threw a lot of mud against the wall to get those memorized. But now, generally, I chant them every day, generally, after I do my rounds from a Samhita prayer. So I don't want to lose them. I want to keep them. You know, now I can, you can just tell me, five, give me a number, and I can chant the verse, you see, of the Brahma Samhita prayers. Like, you know, 531, Aloha Chandra, Mangalam. In this way. So it's ecstatic to know some verses. It really is. It's fantastic to have verses. You can just, anytime you can, you're sitting on the airplane waiting to take off, well, let me do a few verses. You see, just go inside your, in your heart, just, you know, Chintamani Pagata Sadmasagoma Vikrata. It's nice to have such a facility. So memorizing verses is very good for your own Krishna consciousness, and it's fantastic for preaching. What is the effect of coming to the temple in the morning and the evening? You'll become a pure devotee in due course. If you keep coming to the temple, you'll become a pure devotee. We see in ISKCON some senior devotees are calling Matajis also Prabhu. How much correct is that? Well, actually, they're more of Prabhus than the men, really, the women, because when I was a kid, my mother bossed me around more than my dad. Because he was at work all day, and I was at home with my mom, so my mom was a much bigger Prabhu than my dad was, actually, for me. So the women are definitely Prabhus, but these Prabhus are called Manaji, as per Papa's instruction to me. There's some debate going on in ISKCON, but I mean, I just chuckle about it. It's to me, it's a silly thing. Completely silly. The fact is, sometimes Prabhupada, you can see in the Veda base, he mentions in a few places, Prabhupada does say, like, Jamuna Prabhu or Jean Prabhu even. When one Agastya, she was not initiated yet, Prabhupada says Jean Prabhu. He says, Prabhupada does sometimes say Prabhu in relation to women. But he didn't tell us to do that. He did it, but he didn't instruct us to do that. He told us, and he told, I have a letter directly from Srila Prabhupada to me, address every woman as mother, an order from Prabhupada. So what am I supposed to do? The women, one lady, she said, one of my beloved godsons, she said, they made a whole big stink at the leaders' meeting. We want to be called Prabhus, not Madhavji. And they said, if you don't meet our demands, we will go to the media. They threatened us. We'll report you to the media. We'll make a stink with the media if you don't give in to our demand. So after the meeting, I approached her. I don't want to give her name, but she's a senior God sister. I said, dear God sister of mine, we're actually friends. You know, I respect her a lot. She respects me. But I never really spoken to her before, but that's why my relationship began with her after the meeting. She didn't even know who I was, but I said, you know, Prabhupada told me I should call every woman his mother. So it's okay if I call you mother. And she got a little upset, but she couldn't say anything. But to me, it's a joke. It's a joke. I just laugh, you know. It's so silly thing. They, you know, we have to, Prabhupada's instructions don't matter anymore. Now, political correctness is more important than Prabhupada's teachings. I mean, come on. Do you want Vedic culture or Mlecha culture? Manaji is another type of Prabhu, even more respectful Prabhu for me in my mind, you see. Because my mother was, I had to be more obedient than my mother. She was more, I was with her every day, you know, all day long, growing up as a kid. So my mother is a bigger Prabhu than a Prabhu. It's a bigger Prabhu than a Prabhu. So to me, it's just another type of, it's the bigger Prabhu. The greater Prabhu is the Madhaji. So if they want to change this, I'm just going to laugh. I'm going to make a big, if the GBC makes any resolution, I'm going to make a revolution against it. I don't think they will, but if they did, I would make a revolution against it. They get it up, you might, sometimes the GBCs make resolutions, and then there's so much an uproar, the next year they'll they'll cancel it. It happened a few years ago. They made some resolution, and so many devotees said, this is ridiculous. How the GBC can do this? And they made a big complaint in the GBC. Okay, the next year they canceled it. So the GBC says all the women should now be called Prabhu. I'm gonna make a big campaign in our movement to get signatures and bring, we'll get that one canceled, because that's not what Prabhupada said. That's not what he said. They are Prabhus, and we see them as Prabhus. But as a matter of protecting ourselves from being too intimate with them, we call them Manaji. And what is the mood of a Manaji? You are my mother, I am your son, Prabhupada said. If you go, yeah, Manaji, that's wrong. Manaji, like, who are you? You're just one of those Manajis, you know. No, that's offense. That's an offense. Vaishnavi aparad. Is it? Yeah, you're just a Manaji. No, Manaji, you're my mother, I'm your son. That mood, you see. That, in that mood, we should say Manaji, as a son addressing his mother. Okay. Sometimes during the process of devotional service, one can get absorbed in the practice sadhana. And therefore, one may neglect having dependence on the spiritual master. One can get absorbed in the practice sadhana, something. The thing is, it's only by the mercy of the spiritual master that you can absorb yourself in the practice of Krishna consciousness. So you have to keep your attitude of gratitude and don't become an ingrate. Ingrates don't go back to Godhead. How do we serve devotees who are on an equal level with us? As friends, but with love. More? Okay. How can we always remain enthusiastic like yourself? Well, I don't know if I'm always enthusiastic, but I'm certainly trying to always be enthusiastic. For me, it's simple. Prabhupada told me that Krishna would bless me if I maintain my enthusiasm. So, actually, I do maintain my enthusiasm, because I know that's how I'm going to taste the nectar. That's how I'm going to be happy. That's how I'll be successful on this path. In spite of whatever may be there, always keep the enthusiasm. I've always done that. Many others I've seen, and when Prabhupada left the planet, they left the movement. It's a huge exodus of Prabhupada's disciples after he left the planet. How many Prabhupada disciples are here in the room today? Raise your hands. All the Prabhupada disciples, raise your hands. I'm the only one. So you can see there was a big exodus. There's many of them are still, most of them are still alive also, but how many of them are active in our temples, you see? So, but how come I'm here and they're not? You see, because I always maintain my enthusiasm in all circumstances, no matter what. Come hell or high water, always be enthusiastic about Prabhupada's mission, and Krishna will bless you. So learn from my example. having given the responsibility by seniors, we might have to push devotees to get the work done. Yes, because we're tamagunis. Sometimes we have to be pushed. Is that an offense? No. You do it as nicely as possible, but do the needful to get the work done. That's not that in the name of getting the work done you can be offensive. I can give you some examples. This is a very dear godbrother of mine, but he was very, very, when he was the temple president, I'm not going to give the name, but he was very heavy. He was overly heavy. He got the work done. He was overly heavy. He used to run, when it was time for the devotees to go on Sankirtan, he would have a stick to chase you to the van with a stick. And I was sick as a dog one day in the Brahmacharya Ashram. He came in and kicked me because I wasn't up working. I was very ill, and he kicked me. The temple president kicked me. And I had to go outside in the yard because I was very ill, just to be protected from getting kicked again. I went out into the yard. So he got things done, but then he fell down after that, you see. So you can push the devotees, but if you go too far, then you'll fall down eventually from the offenses. So a manager has to sometimes push. It's like the parents have to push the child to learn how to read. He doesn't want to go to school. Prabhupada didn't even want to go to school, but his parents forced him to go to school. They even hired somebody to take him to the school to make sure he went to the school. He didn't go somewhere else. They hired some man to go with Prabhupada to the school, make sure he actually went to the school. So in the beginning, a little some force is necessary, you see. But the love has to always be there, you see. If you get in this lording it over mood in the name of getting the work done, I'm a manager and this work has to be done, then you may get the work done, but you'll fall down eventually because of the Vaishnava parad. But that devotee now and I have a very good relationship. It's all those days are all forgotten, and we're hugging friends now. And we kind of laugh thinking about the old days. The wild, passionate times that used to be there. And that all was rectified. But I'm just saying, he went through some difficulty because of those offenses he committed in those days. Who is a senior devotee and who is a junior devotee? Okay, there's different ways you can measure seniority. One is age. Somebody is physically older, you expect them, you give them respect for being a senior. That's one way. Another way is who joined the movement, who got initiated first. Even in the yajna, who got their beads first? We got initiated the same day, but you got your beads before me. That means you're my senior. It's that precise. Whoever got the beads first in the yajna, they're senior to you. If you got the beads second and they got them before you, they're senior. So that's another way of senior, who got initiated first. But the number one consideration of seniority is who is more Krishna conscious. And that's more subtle. Now you can measure that. It's not easy to discern that, but that's the real bottom line, who is more Krishna conscious.
Position in service.
Oh yeah, also managerial position. That just like I treat as my seniors in terms of my activities, even my juniors, who are not even Prabhupada's disciples, you see, they're my juniors. But I treat them as a senior because they're a managerial position as a GBC, a temple president, a regional secretary, etc. You see. So that's also seniority, a managerial position. I treat them as a person that I report to, even though they're my junior, you see, in terms of when I got initiated.
So do you see, you said somebody has to be seen as a senior when they are in age, and if they are not devotee, you still have to see them as a senior?
I respect someone an elderly person is all respectable in Vedic culture. Even if they're a complete rascal, that they're respectable, and we respect they're an elderly person. You see, just like some elderly person comes and they have a hard time walking, we offer respect to them. It's an elderly person having a hard time getting in the door, common etiquette. It's common etiquette. Not fanatically, of course not. I wouldn't present something fanatical that they're a pure devotee because they're older than me. I have to do whatever they say. My parents, well, my grandmother, she was my senior in that sense, but she told me, why didn't you become a Baptist minister? Well, I'm not going to follow that advice because she's my senior and my grandma. No. We have one authority, and that's our spiritual master. And in ISKCON, we have one authority, and that's Prabhupada. All authority comes down from Prabhupada. So the real seniors are those who are the most absorbed through the most dedicated and absorbed Srila Prabhupada, they are the actual seniors in the highest sense, who is the most absorbed in thinking, feeling, and living the teachings of Prabhupada, whether every thought, word, and deed, in all times, places, and circumstances. They're the most senior devotees. Okay, so it looks like that's it. So we'll stop here, and we thank you all very much for your participation in this movement. Kindly dive deeply, deeply, deeply into the sublime mellows of Krishna consciousness as taught by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. And that day will come very soon when you will personally meet Krishna. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Jai.